Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in.
The U.S. continues to strike boats coming from Venezuela, which the Trump administration claims are used to smuggle drugs. A troop buildup is also underway in the region. The United States has massed numerous warships and around 15,000 soldiers in the Caribbean. And now its most advanced aircraft carrier, the USS Gerald Ford, has also arrived there.
You have to think that missing on everyone's 2025 bingo card was a potential U.S. war with tiny Venezuela. And yet here we are. After at least 21 U.S. attacks on Venezuela ships that were allegedly transporting drugs across the Caribbean, President Donald Trump is reportedly weighing whether to move on to attacking them on land. So far, the bombings of Venezuelan boats have killed an estimated 80 people. That's as the Trump administration has continued to significantly expand the U.S. military's presence in Latin America, deploying F-35 aircraft, warships, and a nuclear submarine, plus the arrival of our largest aircraft carrier, the USS Gerald R. Ford, in the Caribbean Sea. That's a lot of firepower against a country that's roughly the size of Texas and Oklahoma combined. So, how did we get here? For more on what's happening in Venezuela, here's KCBS.
Marco Aponte Moreno, USC Marshall School of Business professor. He specializes in cross-cultural negotiations. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. And what is the plan? What's the end game as far as you can see?
Yes. So I think there are two things going on at the same time. There's definitely a legitimate interest from the Trump government to attack or tackle the drug problem. This is a reality and it's happening. But the second thing that's going on that behind that is the possible regime change in Venezuela.
Is there any disagreement within the Trump administration over how to proceed and those goals that you just talked about?
Yes. So in terms of the first one, the way you know, it is being handled, it's basically bombing little boats that they think have drug dealers in. But as far as we know, nobody's sure whether those were drug dealers or not. So that's one thing. And in terms of the regime change, the idea is to there's this huge display, and it's been building up for the past few weeks. And ideally, there would be a break within the Venezuelan army so that they can do the regime change themselves. So that would be the ideal situation. Now, a possible outcome of this would be an actual intervention in Venezuela.
Well, how has the Venezuelan government been responding?
Yes. So there have been a lot of military exercises all over Venezuela in the past week. They ended today. And there's a huge deployment of the Venezuelan army on the northern coast of the country where the Caribbean Sea is.
Now, is there an off-ramp? Is there a negotiation to happen, or will it continue to ramp up until you think the Trump administration gets to their goals?
Yes, so there have been multiple negotiations over the years. At this point, from what we know, they have been talking to the president of Venezuela, offering possible places where he could go if the government was overthrown, and places that they're talking about, Turkey is one, Cuba is another one, and possibly Russia. So yeah, there have been negotiations, but again, the negotiations with the Maduro regime, is a dictatorship, has been in power for many years, have always ended in frustration.
If there is a regime change, who would be the new leader?
Yeah, so July of last year, July 28, Venezuela had an election, and we elected a new president, Edmundo González, by 70% of the vote, and the election was, and the results weren't recognized by the Maduro regime, and they announced different results, and Maduro stayed in power. So the idea is that if there's a regime change, Edmundo González, who is backed by the leader of the Venezuelan opposition, who is Maria Corina Machado, who won the Nobel Peace Prize this year, they will take power.
All right, Professor, we really appreciate your time this afternoon.
by Dr. Evan Ellis, Research Professor of Latin American Studies at the U.S. Army War College. Dr. Ellis, good to talk with you today. You read the tea leaves here. Are we heading toward a possible combat activity between the U.S. and Venezuela?
Well, I think we're heading towards something. President Trump, of course, had said that he, for the moment, isn't committed to land strikes. And, of course, so you see the president is the one who always decides, often in a very unpredictable way. Although certainly with the Ford carrier battle group there, I think that expands the Joint Task Force commander's options. I think it's likely if the president does commit to it, you could see perhaps some initial land strikes, perhaps against military targets tied with the drugs from the Cartel de los Solas, perhaps the military command targets. I think at some point in the future, perhaps we're talking weeks, you could see a larger strike designed to take out the leadership of the Cartel de los Solas, which could open up the possibility for the restoration of the democratic government of Edmundo Gonzalez. But for me, regime change and restoration of democracy is not the primary effort here of the president.
How militarized is the cartel, or should I say are the cartels in Venezuela? Do they actually have military outposts?
They don't. The cartels are essentially, Cartel de Solas is a criminal franchise where all of the activities, the drugs, the illegal mining, the extortion of remittances and things all flow up to the military leadership. And it's believed, of course, to Maduro and other folks. However, the real issue, although it's not a major issue, is, of course, the Venezuelan defenses, the air defenses. You have the traditional military of about 90,000 people. You have a reserve, you have a Bolivarian Guard, and you have a larger, although highly untrained, larger force. You have some, you know, more or less capable Russian air defense missiles, the S-300s, and you have some recently delivered items to defend those. You have some older generation Sukhoi 30 aircraft. And so it's really the conventional Venezuelan forces at Maduro's disposition more than anything else that would be the threat to any U.S. Activity.
If there was U.S. activity, what would you expect? Would it be airstrikes against targets? Might we actually see boots on the ground, American boots on the ground in Venezuela?
I would anticipate, if that happens, two phases. Number one, I think you could see some initial strikes. They might be by Tomahawks or others, perhaps some special operations activity, maybe with 160th SOAR, that you designed, again, to signal our willingness to go against land targets and especially Maduro leadership targets. If that doesn't lead to essentially the end of the Cartel de Solas, people taking matters into their own hands, I think then at some point, maybe in a couple of weeks, you could see a larger operation. I think it would be brief, decisive, without enduring boots on the ground. And what that larger operation would look like would likely be, you know, first a massive operation with, you know, Tomahawks, electronic jamming things against basically taking down the air defenses. And then that would be when you would see the carrier strike group and the F-18s and others, and perhaps complemented by, you know, B-1s, B-2s, B-52s and others brought in, you know, from continental United States. And that would probably at that point be where you also, once the air defenses were down, once the Venezuelans were blind and confused, you would perhaps see the use of the amphibious operations, bringing in Marines by LCACs, by the V-22s and others, essentially in coordination with people on the ground in Venezuela to snatch and grab the key Maduro leadership. That doesn't mean it would be successful, or at least entirely successful, but that's what I anticipate, you know, some initial operations, perhaps now relatively low risk, but if there was a larger operation, again, it would be massive, and it would basically follow essentially the blinding and taking out of those defenses. And then to the degree that was successful and you had a legitimate Edmundo Gonzalez, it might be that regime then invited the U.S. to continue to participate going after Cartel de los Solas targets in Venezuela after that. But that would be a matter of, you know, things that could happen in 2026.
But can the U.S. do this? Does this amount to a war? Can the president unilaterally do it without the approval of Congress? How does that work?
Well, you know, certainly the president has talked about essentially hostilities against this group, a non-international conflict. But you know, whether that is a war or not, demanding the invocation of the War Powers Act, I'll leave that in the hands of the lawyers and the politicians. But certainly that has been a key item for discussion.
While the outcome is unknown, some say the U.S. attacks are working. David Smolansky, an advisor to the Venezuelan opposition leader and Nobel Peace Prize winner Maria Corina Machado, told CNN, "They are cracking. Actually, they are cracking. And there is a lot of tension and mistrust among themselves. But how far will we go?" Here's Fox News' James Carafano on The Mark Cox Show with U.S. military options short of an all-out war.
Well, you know, we just saw this amazing election in Bolivia, which is a country that has been immersed in this, you know, socialist communist ideology. And it was actually kind of ground zero for the leftist movement in Latin America. And the country just said, yeah, no thanks. We're done.
Well, right. What about the buildup of our military and around Venezuela and the fact that we're taking out these drug boats? We take out more and more of them. I don't know how many it's in the...
On the drug thing, you got to work, and this is a fine entry-level thing, because when you start doing this stuff, you're putting pressure on the organization, and then they have to start an adapted chain. But what you really have to do is work your way up the value chain. I mean, because, you know, these guys that are getting... getting rid of those guys is not going to dent into the cartel. And so this puts pressure on the cartels. It sends a strong message. It disrupts them. But then what you have to do, like we do, is you have to work your way up the value chain and start taking people out, taking away their money, taking away their leaders.
Yes.
That's really going to degrade that. So the other thing is Kash Patel going to China and getting a deal with the Chinese to cut off the precursors. That is the other end of starting to, you know, burning the candle from both ends, starting to pressure these guys. So that's perfect. And then then what happens is, as you do this, what's going to happen is people are going to flip. People are going to start offering and cutting deals. This is exactly how we went after the mob in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
You think of the guys, you know, like the putting the guys in and getting people and starting to flip at the lower level, and then they flip on the higher guys, and then you start to just walk your way up the value chain and take out the network. This is the same strategy, and so it's going in the right direction. So I'm all in for that. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know what the end game is in Venezuela. When you send the most powerful aircraft carrier in the universe and you park it outside their waters, that's kind of, I'm sure, scare the hell out of a lot of people.
I would think.
So the Trump is like not into regime change and nation building and all that. My guess is he's just trying to really, ramp up the pressure.
Right.
So that the people inside the regime just crack. That's my guess, but I don't know. You know, I would not be surprised if Trump does kinetic hits inside Venezuela.
Wow.
I don't know if that's the plan, but ratcheting it up in that way, that would not surprise me. You know, what Trump has done with these hits on the boats is he's now tested the waters on the limits of what he can get away with, both in terms of domestic support and international response. And he's been pretty successful so far. So taking that next step and maybe doing kinetic hits inside the country, if he wants to go that next step, he's probably laid the groundwork for that. I don't know.
Yes. Jim, isn't there a larger play here with the China involvement in the China trade deals that they do with Venezuela, including oil and other things? Don't you think that's also part of the bigger play here to kind of tell them Monroe documents, stay out of our backyard?
Well, absolutely. The goal at the end of the day is to diminish the influence of the cartels, which are a direct national security threat, the Chinese engagement in the region, the Russian engagement in the region, and all the deep Islamist networks like Hamas and Hezbollah have had.
Yep.
So the president's goal at the end of the day is to make our home team ground safe. And so diminishing all of those, that is the end state that he seeks. And what
help.
We're picking
yeah.
up yep. as part of that is more partners. So we have Argentina. We're going to get Chile. Bolivia's turned our way. You know, eventually Colombia will, and Brazil. And it'll be a much more safer neighborhood.
Let's hope. Anyway, Jim Carafano, appreciate you as always, my friend. Thank you.
So how does America feel about Trump's handling of Venezuela and other foreign affairs? Turns out they're feeling pretty darn positive. Here's the Bob Rose Show with more.
U.S. economy added in September, amid some uncertainty about economic conditions, but it was good news. Added 119,000 jobs. Doesn't sound like a ton, but you have to remember, they only predicted about 50,000 jobs. So it's way above the estimate of economists. I'll let Trump tell you all about what he thinks about economists, and I'm probably very close to being in agreement with him. But anyway, so that was good. And then the unemployment rate rose just a tad to 4.4%. That was a little higher than expectations. I guess they were looking at 4.3. It's not huge either way. Let's see. And, oh, the numbers coming up will be a little bit odd because of the government shutdown. So, yeah, everything's a little skewed to some extent because of that. You know, these things are estimates, and then they come back and they correct them and all that. But, no, that was good. So, I don't know, economically, things are looking good. We're on the right track, but somehow some of these polls, and I haven't looked at them really deeply, but, you know, Trump's approval ratings on the economy and other things aren't that great. It's like, what are your expectations? They even said, like, food's more, gas is more. They named, like, four or five things that they think are more expensive now than they were a year ago, and we still have a way to go. I understand the whole affordability issue. The cost of homes has gone up. Some of that's starting to come down, though, okay, at least a little bit. And then the interest rates have come down a little bit. They need to go a lot more. Trump can't control that. He's tried with everything he's got to push interest rates low. You know, everything short of actually choking Jerome Powell live on TV, which he's come close to, but he hasn't done it yet. And that wouldn't be a good idea. But he's done everything he can as a president to make his case for lower rates. And that does impact a lot of us. But the big, beautiful bill and all that, you know, that stuff doesn't kick in until January. So you're not going to see any net effects from that for a while. People must just be really, really impatient. I don't know what I just, when I look at it, I think, wow, I wonder what things would be like if it was, you know, President Harris. I know, I shudder. I shudder to think. Because Trump in, 10 months has just, he's done incredibly, incredibly well. Look at all this money that's coming, pouring into the nation to invest. Not only financially does that matter, it matters because now countries believe in us. They believe in America, our to deliver goods, services, products, the American work ethic, all that. They believe in that. They believe in we're a stable enough economy to want to do business with us long term. Those are all good things. And then they have skin in the game. They want America to succeed because they have a financial incentive to see that through.
That helps everybody.
Absolutely. So I don't know where this stuff's coming from. President Donald Trump currently enjoys the highest foreign policy job approval rating of any 21st century president. So the rest of the world gets it, but some of our own people don't. Isn't that weird?
That's crazy.
And remember, all those same people that don't get it economically, maybe they're the same ones that said, we're not respected around the world. Nobody likes Donald Trump,
right?
Which was an out-and-out lie, and it's proven to be a lie time and time again. Wow.
You're going to tell me the world didn't know that Joe Biden was losing it and was just really not among us anymore?
Remember that.
They know that.
That's the Democrat Party that lied to you about that,
yes.
Lied to you about borders, thinks that biological men should be in your daughter's locker room and competing against her. Sorry. No thanks. Mm-mm. So at this particular point in his second term, Trump has a 43% job approval rating on foreign policy, which tops both of his 21st century counterparts, George W. Bush and Barack Obama. At this point in his second term, Bush's foreign policy approval rating sat at a dismal 36%. Obama was right there with him at 37%. So, yeah, Trump's got good numbers there. Job approval on foreign policy, the best of over the last, 24 years, 25 years? So that's excellent. But how come the people don't, they haven't gotten on the correct page when it comes to the economy? And where are they getting their information from? I guess they're getting from, you know, Instagram and TikTok and, you know, lefty-leaning, news outlets and all these other, like, activist groups and stuff that put stuff out. Bots working for China and Russia, I guess. Crazy.
Some experts believe these attacks on Venezuelan ships is a pretext for forcing Maduro from power. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, in fact, announced that Cartel de los Soles, a criminal organization that the Trump administration claims is headed by Maduro, as a foreign terrorist organization. Here's more from Tommy Tucker on WWL.
Tell me about Maduro and the stolen election, if you will, please.
Okay, yeah. So back in 2023, the United States brokered some agreements with Maduro government, basically suggesting that they would go to a democratic election, a fair democratic election. Of course, they broke many of the agreements, but they did end up sort of stumbling their way to a democratic election. And that one of the things that they did that broke the agreement was they disqualified Maria Corina Machado. So you might recognize that name because she recently won the Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. She was the dominant opposition leader and the leader of the polls. They disqualified her from the presidential race, so she got a substitute candidate, which she supported, and that substitute candidate won 70% of the vote. No, the Maduro government did not recognize that election. No, and she basically just said, oh, no, we're, our numbers show that we won the election. It was just a very open fraud that nobody believed. And since then, they've cracked down on opposition. They've cracked down on civil society. Most of the opposition leaders are outside of the country now, and you have a situation in which, you know, people I'm still making contact with in Venezuela, because I haven't been there since that election, you know, say that people don't talk about politics in the street. You know, people, you know, there's a lot of distrust, and it's really difficult economically. People are just basically trying to, you know, put food on the table and keep their head down and working and trying to get, you know, make a go of it. So it is it's a really bad situation in Venezuela right now with Maduro and with the economy. No, and this stolen election has just really exacerbated it. And this is, you know, one of the things to remember behind all this is what's going on with Venezuelans. I mean, there's a great need for a solution, and it's not just going to come magically from the inside, but it's not going to come magically from the outside either. There needs to be some sort of multilateral effort to try and get Venezuela back on track, rather than just sort of United States trying to be the regional policeman.
Yeah, this is our business. Why? That's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. Because Venezuela is not, a main drug supplier of the United States. I think you could say geopolitically, Venezuela is an important place for the United States, given its deep oil reserves and mineral wealth. There's that going on. But other than that, all of these stories about Nicolas Maduro controlling the train to Aragua, that they're penetrating the United States. I mean, all of that is really, you know, borderline fiction. I mean, there's always a little grain of truth there, but it's completely blown out of proportion. No, Nicolas Maduro does not control the train to Aragua. They are not invading the United States. There are some Venezuelan immigrants that have caused, got involved in crime. But we know over the years, statistics show, all the studies we have show that immigrants commit fewer crimes than people that are born in the country. And that's the case in the United States, and that's the case virtually everywhere. And so a lot of this is really just a background of this is the stigmatization of immigrants. No, stigmatization of immigrants from Latin America in particular. It plays really well with Trump's base. And so, you know, that is, I don't really see that there's a whole lot of U.S. interest here. There are some interests in Venezuela that want to get back to democracy, and there's some geopolitical interests, but I think those could be treated in a quite different way.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time.
Here's Tara Servatius with more on the cartels and Venezuela's role in that.
We've been watching our military assets being moved into place off the coast of both Venezuela and Mexico. Mm-hmm. And overnight, we had that, yesterday afternoon overnight leak in the UK Daily Mail that the Trump administration, the Pentagon, getting ready for some sort of strike, act of war. When you have almost 500,000 Americans dead just of fentanyl, not drug overdoses, we've always had those, just of fentanyl. In the last almost 5 years. That is war. That is what that is. That is war. It is not acceptable. It is being done by the Chinese, the communist Chinese, with the help of the drug cartels. And if you want to understand the fact, you know, that it is actually war, that they are like, hey, let's see how many of them Joe Biden will let us kill. Here's your proof. And I will never forget this. Scott Bessent is negotiating personally with China about 8 weeks ago, 9 weeks ago now. And they're trying to come up with, you know, some kind of trade agreement. They've been working on it for a while. And China actually puts on the table that they will stop sending fentanyl to America. That they will stop, they will halt the fentanyl trade. Meaning, for the first time, Lee, they're admitting they do it. It's an act of war. That was one of the planks. Hey, you know, we'll stop killing y'all. I have a whole line of cuss words I'd like to say to that. Look, and when you hear from our sheriff, and this is one of the things I get frustrated with. I get texts from Americans. I get texts from listeners. Say, well, you know, you shouldn't use drugs. Well, no, you absolutely should not use drugs. But this ain't that. Again, in the 1990s, and it has actually gone down, 50% of all high schoolers graduated having tried marijuana. Well, I had the sheriff of this county on this show, and he says, we have found marijuana laced with fentanyl. You should be able to try pot. You shouldn't do it if your kid's in the car. Don't do that. But people used to do it, walk away, have fine, productive lives without dying. Not anymore. Why? China kills them in an act of war. And that's not okay. That's not okay. So we're talking about war on the cartels and war on the Venezuelan dictator, who I hope they capture alive, because I want to have a conversation with him. I want to know a little bit more about those safe houses that he claims the FBI was running Tren de Aragua through. He keeps giving that speech where he tells Trump, listen, I didn't want to send all the Tren de Aragua gangbangers. Biden made me. He had a price on my head. He made me send them. And he keeps telling Trump, check out the Colombian safe houses. That's where the FBI was running them through and then into the country. I want to have a conversation with that guy. What safe houses? What FBI? Who are we dealing with? So I hope they don't kill him. I hope we capture him. And if you notice, they put a $50 million bounty on his head, Lee. Yep. I think that's why. Instead of just droning the guy and being done with it. So we'll see which route they go. But these are true warlike institutions. And they need to be taken out. And I'm glad he's going to war with them. We've got to break. It is real. It is criminal, and it is incredibly dangerous because they want to turn parts, if not all of this country, into Mexico, where election season, Lee, is killing season. It's hunting season. If you won't sign on the dotted line to be owned by the cartels, they kill you.
Yep.
They kill you. 160 attempted assassinations in the last political season. They killed 60.
And the families of those candidates are at risk as well.
Huge. I mean, one of them, the most, and it's getting worse. The one that is so outrageous, the one you look it up, it's 2 months ago. A mom and her daughter, same party as the president of Mexico, fell afoul somehow, and we don't know the background of it, with the cartels. They live stream the assassination of the mom and her daughter. She's campaigning on Facebook. The cartel did. That's why we have to fight these cartels. We have to deconstruct and you know what they built, Lee. And again, I can't play this enough. Ken Paxton saying this. This is him a little over 2 years ago, AG of Texas, explaining this. This is what Trump is fighting.
They're taking federal law and dismantling it. And he's making up his own rules as we go that allow the cartels to gain a foothold, a really strong foothold in the United States, not just in my state, but really across the, they're building a network across the country so that they can keep doing this well after Biden's gone.
And, you know, lo and behold, who overnight but the Democrats is telling Trump, hey, no, don't do this. Don't go after the cartels. Leave them alone. Can you explain to me how America is better off if we leave the cartels alone?
Yeah.
Could you just do
good,
that?
Good question.
And look, they're twisting themselves into pretzels, Lee, to try to argue this. I mean, like Newsweek, New York Times headline, Trump strikes on Mexican cartels could backfire disastrously. It could be bad. We need to leave them alone. Why? So they can human traffic another 500,000 child sex slaves into the country?
Yeah. Trump administration has got some victories going on in Mexico right now anyway, because the threat of military action on the outside, that was the public face of it. There's negotiations going on between the U.S. and Mexican governments, and they're cooperating, and they are cracking down on this. There's been, you know, several drug cartel leaders that have been handed over to U.S. authorities recently, and that hasn't gotten a lot of attention. But there's some behind the scenes things going on, because the president of Mexico has to be very careful about how she openly talks about cooperation with Trump, but there's cooperation going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, because the cartels will kill her.
Yeah, exactly.
They will. And, you know, one of the things that's so telling, they turned over 29 of these thugs in February, trying to pacify Trump. When that didn't work, they turned over another two dozen. It was like last week.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of them, well, it was actually two of them, but one of them assassinated a DEA agent. Another one of them assassinated a sheriff's deputy in the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah. Goes back a ways, doesn't it?
Well, you realize we give them bare minimum $50 million a year to train their military, which is so cartel infiltrated that it's hard to tell what the heck they're running there. And they didn't turn them over. Murderers who killed, by the way, these people killed on our soil and then fled back to Mexico. And they what? We just didn't ask for them back? Who has been running this country?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of tolerance that's allowed the cartels to go, you know, we can do whatever we want. We can come over the border, as they did right after Trump took office, and open fire twice on Americans. One of them was just a group of hikers. You know? That's not going to fly.
Well, that's why Trump's got several billion dollars worth of U.S. Navy assets sitting off the coast of Venezuela right now.
Yeah. So. And that's the biggest, honestly the biggest cartel of them all. Venezuela, people don't know, is deeply involved in fentanyl trafficking into this country on behalf of China, as the Mexican cartels are too. That's why he's taking a fight to them.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.